Good evening, this is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your guest host, John Curry. Tonight on Life Rattle 1339, we feature two more special Earth Day stories. Tonight's by Brandon Kimmel and Shane Driver. Today is the second program in a two-part Earth Day series this month. For me, good Earth writing is good place-based writing. Environmental writer Rebecca Solnit calls a sense of place the sixth sense, an internal compass and map made by memory and spatial perception together. I believe that by writing about places where things happened, we give to others a glimpse at our maps, so that the writing becomes a window toward how we've come to make sense of ourselves. The two places on today's program tread gently, fascinating us as much with the people as with the settings in which we find them. Our first writer tonight, Brandon Kimmel, was born in 1994 on the first day of summer in Toronto, Ontario. He was born as the only child on his father's side, but the younger of two kids, later to be the middle child of three on his mother's side. His father was born in Alliston, Ontario, and his mother was born in Daxichao, China. His father left home when he was 15 to pursue a business career. He eventually ended up as one of the leading private label manufacturers of cat litter and dog treats globally. His mother left home when she was 10 in an effort to escape communist China. She eventually successfully immigrated to Canada in 1993 after spending a few years in Hungary. Brandon went to elementary school in Etobicoke and public school in Mississauga. During high school, Brandon set his path toward being a doctor. But at university, he learned that his true passion lies in botany and biology and decided he wanted to be an environmentalist. Brandon Kimmel is currently finishing his degree in environmental management while trying to follow in his father's footsteps and pursue a business specializing in hydroponic greenhouse farming in an equatorial country. Brandon's piece introduces us to his grandma on her farm in rural China through a Skype conversation. Since Brandon spent time there growing up, he recognizes and describes the place in vivid detail, placing us there. Just as much as he shows us the changes there, such as running water and an internet connection, we see some important things that endure, such as his grandparents' sustainable farming practices, just as they have for many years. The piece also captures the lovely bond he shares with his grandma through their dialogue. Let's listen now as Brandon Kimmel reads his story, Grandma's Feathery Grenades and Organic Apples, tonight on Life Rattle.
Grandma's Feathery Grenades and Organic Apples by Brandon Kimmel. The Skype dial tone rings as I wait for my grandmother to pick up the phone. Hello? Grandma? No answer. Grandma? Hello? I hear her voice. I'm still trying to work this gosh darn iPad thing. Grandma's smiling face finally pops up on my computer screen. I see you, Grandma. It's working. Do you see me? She asks. I see you. Yes, Grandma, it's working. Grandma is 72 years old and considers technology one of the greatest obstacles she's ever overcome. She grew up and lived on a traditional Chinese farm with orchards, livestock, and no electricity until she and Grandpa immigrated to Canada 22 years ago. Every 6 months, Grandma goes back to China to help with the farm and visit family. I never thought that I would one day be speaking to Grandma through any piece of technology, let alone talking to her face-to-face on a computer screen from the farm in China. What time is it there, for heaven's sake? She asks. Shouldn't you be in bed sleeping? It's midnight. I'm here talking to you, aren't I? Grandma always questions my bedtime, and I always tease back. There's never not going to be a 12-hour difference, so just look at the clock before asking. Her eyes crease, and her dimples emerge at the edges of her comforting smile. I visited the farm many times when I was a young boy. It's incredible to see this rural property deep in the Chinese countryside, change from not having access to running water or electricity to a place that now had internet access. On the monitor, I can see the sun shining behind Grandma through the windows of the farm's tiny two-room house, made of brick, mud, and mortar. The roof, once made of straw and pieces of metal sheeting, now has shingles. The same cabinet I remember from childhood still sits against the wall beside Grandma. It's filled with pillows and stacks of folded blankets and comforters that only leave their confinement come nighttime. I know that in the other room stands a small, knee-high cement structure built to encase the cooking fire, with a doggy door opening at the bottom to stoke the fire. A massive wok sits on top of a large concave impressed into the cement frame. The floor remains just dirt and rock, probably the very same dirt and rock that lay there before the frame of the house was built over it. Through the window, I can see the dirt roads, the neglected foliage, and when I peer just close enough, I can see the 6 two-room houses of my uncles and aunts that form a community. The Wongs, friends of the family, have a similar communal setup within earshot of ours. I love it all and miss it. Grandma's voice interrupts my nostalgic trip. "So what did you want to talk about?" she asks. Grandma's graying hair is tied tightly in a bun on top of her head. She sits, as always, with perfect posture, back straight and cross-legged, with the tops of her feet bent and touching the other knee. Through the iPad screen, she looks at me with her warm brown eyes, smiles tenderly, and waits for me to respond. "So, Grandma, can you walk around without the internet cutting out?" "I think so. There's internet in each house now, so we don't have to fight over it." She gets off the bunk and slips on her shoes. With each step she takes, I can hear the gravel and dirt crunch underneath her feet. "Wow, it's so hot. There's so many flies out today." She grabs a fly swatter and effortlessly swats a fly out of the air and kills it. "Stop leaving the damn door open!" Grandma screams at my grandfather across the yard as she closes the door behind her. Sitting at my desk, I follow her around the yard that I grew up in. "Remember that calf you watched being born?" she asks. "How could I forget?" She points the camera at a massive bull. The one-ton beast stares at Grandma. She goes over, pats him on the head, and continues walking. "Where are you taking me?" I ask. "Just showing you around," she replies. "I'll show you all the pigs." She points the camera at the 2 pig pens. I hear all the little piglets slipping and sliding through the mud before I see them. In the corner, the boar and sow lie beside each other, supervising their piglets from the comfort of their cool mud pile. "Grandma, what do you feed them? Is it pre-bought feed?" "Of course not. That's expensive and wasteful. Pigs are living compost bins that turn our garbage into money or food, depending on whether we slaughter or sell them." I hear clucking. "Are those chickens?" I ask. Grandma points the screen downward in response to my question. Hens and roosters run between her legs, their baby chickens tagging close behind. Grandma keeps walking and leads us to one of several chicken roosts. She sticks the iPad inside the roost and yells, "Can you see anything? I can't see what I'm showing you, but hopefully it's working." "Yep," I reply. Inside the roost, it looks like a feathery grenade has exploded. Feces litter the ground and even the walls, with feathers stuck on them. I can see the slight shimmer of a white egg in one or two of the nests. "Grandma," I shout, "I see eggs." "They laid eggs? We'll get those later for dinner." "Hey, remember that time you and..." Yeah, I say. "I remember." Grandma smiles as she unburies the memory. "You and your cousin chased the chickens so damn bad they didn't lay eggs for a week. Your great-grandpa wanted to whoop your ass and I..." "I was 10. 10. I hear Grandma quietly giggle. "Give me a break." She walks to a small silo of finely ground corn and grabs a handful to feed the chickens. She smears the corn between her thumb and fingers to show me the fine, silt-like consistency. She tosses some of the feed onto the ground. "So many people don't care what they eat, grow, or even feed their livestock and plants, she says, and tosses another handful to the baby chicks on the outside of the feeding frenzy. This feed is homegrown corn, ground, and then stored to feed the animals we have. The shit that the animals produce, we use to fertilize our plants. It's the best. Nothing beats it. So many people throw it out and consider it waste, but it's gold. Grandma evenly spreads the rest of the feed to the chickens that have missed out on the feed. As she walks around the property, I see Grandpa walk back into the house and leave the door wide open. "Close the goddamn door, you nitwit!" Grandma shouts at him. Grandpa pops his head back out and shoots her a dirty look. "I'll close the damn door so I can't hear you," he shouts back. I laugh. Grandma brings me over to the side of the hill where the cow grazing trail starts. "I can't bring you on the trail or the internet will die, but you've been on it hundreds of times." She also can't show me the 1,000-acre apple orchard that our family has amassed over the last century. They form a mountain range that would take hours to walk. My family grows all the apples organically. Little brown paper bags sheathe every apple tree within the orchard, each secured by a perfectly tied knot of string. The bags act as barriers to prevent the pests from gaining access to the apples. The soil that each tree grows in was manually plowed. As I walk back with Grandma to her little house from the comfort of my desk, I realize I feel an urge to go back that I hadn't acknowledged in many years. "Is there anything else you wanted to see or know?" Grandma asks. "Dinner's being prepared, so I have to go supervise before they burn something." "That's it, Grandma. I'll call you right back if there's anything else." "Okay. I love you. Tell your dad I said hi." "I love you too. Have a good day and say hi to everyone for me." The call had lasted a few hours, but went by so fast. It dawns on me as I hang up that Grandma's farm isn't a business, an ecological project, or even a chore. It's a way of life. A sustainable way of life that allows future generations to have the same access to resources as my grandmother's generation had.
That was Brandon Kimmel reading his story, Grandma's Feathery Grenades and Organic Apples. Tonight's second writer, Shane Driver, was born in Newmarket in 1982, where he and his family lived until 1990, when they moved to Oakville. After a difficult youth, Driver decided he wanted more out of life and enrolled in college in Peterborough to study business. There he met his longtime partner, Paulina. After graduation, Driver moved to Ottawa to earn a marketing diploma. His studies were interrupted when his father died unexpectedly from a heart attack. Driver and Paulina moved back to Mississauga. Work in sales left Driver uninspired. His worst nightmare was to spend his life in a career he hated, as his father had. With the support of his partner Paulina and his mother Charmaine, Driver returned to school, to university, and found his passion, writing. Last year, Shane Driver published his first book, Broken, available through the Life Rattle website. I love that Shane Driver's piece is as much about the people in it as it is about the garbage they clean up. Driver's writing does much, without it ever feeling like he's trying to impress. The two-way respect shared by the narrator with the girls, for me, makes this piece special. Let's listen now to Trash and Life, written by Shane Driver, read on tonight's program by John Dunford.
Trash and Life by Shane Driver. "What you say, rude boy?" a squirrely-eyed kid asks me as I pick up garbage. He looks to be about 18 or 19 years old and wears a black New York Yankees baseball cap, a gray and white camouflage jumpsuit, and raggedy brown Timberland boots with the tags still hanging from the laces. He blows smoke from his cigarette in my face. The mixed smell of smoke and rancid breath floods my nostrils. "Hey, my man, watch where you're blowing that shit," I say to him. "My bad," he says. "Yo, you need something?" "Nah, man, I'm good." I glance over at Cassandra. She passes glad garbage bags to her two friends, Marissa and Naomi. They are all 18 years old. We're at the intersection of Huron-Ontario and Dundas Street in Cooksville, Mississauga. I've always known the area as 5 and 10. Here, Ontario Street is Highway 10, Dundas, Highway 5. I used to live one block east on Jaguar Valley Road. They call me Easy, the guy says, bringing my attention back to him, and I got the best rock. Listen, brother, I posture up and peer right into his googly eyes. I've been around long enough to know that Easy's been smoking some of his own product. I don't want anything. Respect. But I'm here with my little sister and her friends, I lie. Cassandra is not my sister. I'm helping them out with something for school. Do your thing, brother, but stay away from those girls. I can see Easy deciding about how he should respond. I quickly realize that bringing Cassandra and her friends here to collect garbage to fulfill volunteer hours for their school, Iroquois Ridge High School in Oakville, was not the best idea. Great. The girls are going to have to watch me get into a scrap, I think. Cooling out, he finally replies, his posture relaxing. I do the same. He strolls across the street. I glance to the girls and see they're laughing. They had noticed Easy's pants hanging off his ass. Hey, girls, I say with a grin. Stop laughing. You're going to get me into a brawl. That would be awesome, Cassandra replies. Marissa and Naomi continue to giggle. Funny, Cassandra. Come on. Let's go. I'm going to take you girls to a park up the street. The four of us jump into my Hyundai and drive north on her Ontario towards the Adult Learning Center in an old school on Elm Drive, just south of Square One Shopping Center. I have known Cassandra since she was a baby. I'm friends with her father, Marco. She and her sister, Samantha, have become like sisters to me. Cassandra needs 50 hours of mandatory community service for her school as a graduation requirement. It can be anything that benefits the community. The project must be supervised and signed by an adult. Cassandra's already completed 26 hours. She and her friends collected litter at Valleybrook Park and the Upper Oakville Shopping Center. She asked me if I could take her to 5 and 10. Why do you want to go there? I asked her. I've been there with you before, and that place is a mess. There's trash everywhere. We pull into the parking lot behind the old school. The kids jump out of the cars as if we were on a field trip. Cassandra loves hanging out with me. I feel the same way. You want to help, Shane? She asks. I can't. I'm writing a story about you. Oh yeah, I forgot. Cassandra scans the area. There's lots of garbage here. Then get to it, I tell her. Cassandra is short, maybe 5 feet 2 inches. Her hair is as black as the night sky, but shines bright like the sun. She is caring, and sensitive, and curious, and full of life. She sees the world as a wonderful place, always wanting to find the best in people. I tell her she's sometimes too trusting. Ooh, Cassandra yells as she picks up a dirty diaper with the 4-foot-long claw of her garbage grabber. The tool is a plastic arm with a gripper that grabs objects when the handle is squeezed. She laughs, chases her friends around with the diaper, stops and giggles. After a few minutes of joking around, Cassandra regains focus and takes the lead. We'll all split up, she tells the girls. Naomi, you do the front. Marissa, why don't you go around the portables? I'll stay here and clean up the back and maybe go around the buses. We'll go to the mall after. She begins to holler as the girls leave. Ice cream's on me. Both girls turn around and show glistening white teeth through their smiles. I'm going to start here, Cassandra says to me, and do lines across the soccer field so I can cover the whole area. Halfway through the field, Cassandra has already filled 2 heavy-duty garbage bags. She doesn't complain once. Cassandra is in her final year of high school and works part-time at Food Basics in Oakville to save money for university. She and her sister are close. She's into boys and fashion, like most girls her age. It's funny to see her wearing old, beat-up sweatpants and a shabby t-shirt that reads, "Life's a Fight," on the front. She's usually all done up and concerned about her appearance. I like your shirt, I say to her. I thought you'd like it. She takes a quick water break and then bends over to tie her purple and white Nike shoes. Shane, did I tell you I applied to university for biology? I really want to get into Laurier. I'm a little nervous about leaving home. I'm excited, but nervous. I wanted to go to BC, but it would be too expensive. I'm disappointed, but I know my parents can't afford it. I could get student loans, but I would come out of school with so much debt. I don't want to be one of those people that come out of school with $100,000 in debt. There is no point in that. Cassandra grabs the claw and picks up a crumpled Coke can and then a torn and deflated basketball. She drops them in her third garbage bag. It makes me so mad that people litter like this, she says. How is there so much garbage at the back of a school? This is why our planet will not survive. People are so lazy and ignorant. I've never seen someone Cassandra's age act so genuinely concerned about the environment. The other day, she continues, I was at the Tim Hortons drive-thru. I saw some guy throw his garbage out the window, and there was a garbage can right beside him. Sometimes I wish I was a boy, so I could walk up to people like that and punch them once in the mouth. Then they would think twice before doing stupid things like that. I laugh. That's something your dad would say. Cassandra finishes picking up all the trash behind the school and on the soccer field. The area looks like it's been vacuumed. She especially wanted to clear the field because she spends most of her spare time playing soccer. I have watched some of her games, and she plays soccer like she lives, unselfishly. When she gets a breakaway, she usually passes the ball to one of her teammates so that they have the opportunity to score. When I asked her why she always passes the ball when she gets close to the net, she responded simply with, I like passing the ball. Cassandra gathers the three bags filled with trash and throws them in the dumpster behind the school. I know you're not supposed to throw stuff in the bin, but I picked up all the garbage, so too bad, she proclaims. I agree with her reasoning. I'm going to see if the girls need any help, she says, and starts to stroll alongside the school, picking up cans, wrappers, and bottles along the way. Yellow grass covers the landscape because of the mild winter in the Greater Toronto area. For a girl who has just collected waste for more than 2 hours, she seems especially blissful. I'm going to have you drop us off at my house so that we can shower, and then the three of us are going to the mall, Cassandra says. She invites me along. I decline. She gives me the card from school with her volunteer hours and locations made out. I sign the card. Shane, can you write down your phone number? The teacher wants phone numbers in case she wants to make sure that we actually did it. I add my cell number. Thank you so much for doing this for me, Shane. When I get my paycheck, I'll take you out for dinner. I know you're going to say no, because you don't want me to spend the money. But I want to, and you have to let me. Cassandra goes silent and wraps her arms around me for a hug. Sorry I'm dirty, she says.
That was Trash and Life, written by Shane Driver. This concludes Life Rattle number 1339. My name is John Curry. Lori Callis recorded Brandon Kimmel reading his story and John Johnford reading Shane Driver's story. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Actman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next week for Life Rattle Classic Program, hosted by Virginia Ashbury. Good night.